Want the same expert advice you get from the pros in the store while shopping online at DiscountTire.com? Meet Treadwell, your personal online tire guide that matches you with the perfect tire for your vehicle. Get your best match in 1 minute or less with Treadwell by Discount Tire. Let's get you taken care of.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations. Midweek edition of PFT Live presented by Google Pixel. Learn more, as always, at googlestore.com. As always, on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays in season, it's Chris Sims.
I'm here.
Along with me, Mike Florio. You know, I rarely say who we are. I feel like I've done this not that long ago.
Yeah, it was called last week. Was it last week? Yeah.
I'm old. I'm embracing it. Once I learned about elder abuse,
right.
I am embracing my eventual 60th birthday. Because at that point, I was texting with Rodney Harrison the other day, and I told him, I've learned about elder abuse, so I'm going to be even worse when I turn 60 than I am now. And he said, you know what? I believe you. And so I will be protected against any and all physical violence, including from you and from Rodney, although I don't see Rodney very often. But when I do, he sneaks up behind
me. He's the worst. He hits people. Like, forget, like,
yes,
you get on me about, you know, putting my hands on you and manhandling you a little bit. Rodney, you got to watch out. Like, two things he's obsessed. He loves blindsiding people and, like, kind of trying to take you to the ground. And then the other thing is he has this, like, incredible flexibility. So if you hang around him, you'll turn around every now and then and his foot will be in your face. Like, he's finished a karate kick. And he's always messing around. So, yeah, and he's not the kind of guy that you want to mess around with back because you're like, he might flip a switch, you know, because he is kind of like, he's kind of got that angry pit bull look about him, right, where you're like, hey, he's a cute little nice doggy until he's not, and then he's latched onto my arm and he can snap like that. That's how I deal with Rodney right there.
See, I've never gotten that vibe from him, maybe because – I'm not a quarterback.
Maybe he reserves
that vibe for guys like you. And I remember very early on, this is like 2010, 2011 time frame, I saw Rodney do something as he was moving that almost felt like an optical illusion to me. And it underscores that professional athletes are constituted differently than normal human beings.
Especially guys like that.
He shifted in a way, yeah. And he moved, and he did something, and it's like, it was a superhero. It was like a blur.
Right.
Like, where'd he go?
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, he's 50 or close to it, and he's still rocked up, and like, you touch his body or shoulders or anything like that. Yeah, those guys are freaks of nature. Safeties who can fly around like human missiles and, you know, knock out receivers and all that. Those are like not the guys you want to mess with on the football team. Pound for pound, they're like the craziest and some of the strongest guys on the team.
On that note,
yeah.
I had to make a phone call during the games on Sunday. I missed some of the Vikings-Bills game. How dare I?
Yeah.
And I was wandering around back near the dressing rooms that they have set up at the NBC Sports Studios, and Tim Howard just kind of flashed by me, and we nodded to each other.
Yeah.
He didn't know who the hell I am. He's just one of those guys that nods at everybody because everybody knows who he is.
Right.
And he had just like a T-shirt, a sleeveless T-shirt on. That guy, I would not mess with that
He's
guy.
He's pretty jacked. He's right. You're right.
I would potentially take him
like plus 150 against Rodney because he's like 43. He's younger.
A little
than
younger.
Rodney. But he's that guy. That guy looks like he could mix it up in the secondary.
Yeah.
I think I interviewed him on Dan Patrick's show years ago with the idea, hey, would you want to be a kicker in the NFL? Screw kicker. Make him a strong safety. He'll mess somebody up.
He does have that type of body. I don't disagree with you. You're right. You know, but I'm not going to go against crazy Rodney Harrison no matter what. All right, other thing that's on my mind today, okay? Little Captain Planet's on the mind here. 8 billion people, huh? I mean, 8 billion people. Why doesn't anybody find it weird? Did you hear about this? Yesterday we reached 8 billion people as a world population.
Oh, I didn't know.
Well,
do they have like a count? Like, is each one?
Yeah, like today was the day.
Arrival.
Or yesterday, well,
hey,
they were literally
7,999,999,999. Well, oh, you just missed it. Sorry, Timmy.
Well, it wasn't like New Year's or anything like that, but I think they know by the average amount of babies and people that are born on the day that yesterday was the day they were going to surpass it. And I don't know, it's just weird to me. Why does nobody find it weird that in the history of the planet, all the way up until 1980, there was 4 billion people. And then here in 40 years, we've added another 4 billion people to the planet. How does that sustainable work? I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm just Captain Planet, and it's a weird one to me. And it just is.
Blame all the Barry White records, I guess.
I mean, yeah. And idiots like Elon Musk who are saying, like, hey, we're here to reproduce. No, like, Earth is literally trying to stop us to reproduce. Like, literally trying to stop. I mean, we got people limp everywhere. And people can't do it the old traditional way and get pregnant anymore. But we got 8 billion people. Like that?
Be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah, okay. You didn't do that. I didn't do that.
Well, I didn't. Yeah. We're doing a 2-for-1 swap, so you can't blame me. You're just doing replacement beings, 2-for-2. I didn't realize that the they put the, you know, 8 billion on the McDonald's sign yesterday, but I guess that's a problem. See, I'll be dead in about 50
years.
Oh,
that's the problem with your age group. That's the problem. That's the answer from everybody in your group. You guys are screwed when I'm gone.
Listen. You can't have it both ways, youngster. You can't bust my chops for being old and then expect me to have the mindset that I would have if I was 21. Sorry, it doesn't work that way.
All right, well, you can care about your son and where the earth is
going.
I'll
be dead.
All right.
I'll have bigger problems.
You won't. You'll have no problems. You'll be lying in a damn ditch. You'll have no problems. The life will be easy.
Lying in a ditch. I'll be dead.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean. You said I have bigger problems. You got no problems.
Well, right, but I had this conversation with my wife 20 years or so ago. When we were talking about the concept of life insurance, and I got down the wrong path because my attitude was, why do I want to pay for that? Well, what do you mean? Well, why do I want to pay for it? I'll be dead. Like I don't care at that point. That was a mistake.
Well, you think? I mean, man, damn. I don't care about you or the kid.
I'll be dead.
Jeez.
Like, it can't get anywhere no matter what happens. After I'm gone, you're still alive. You have it infinitely better than I'll have it. I'm dead. Like, that would seem to be the bigger issue than how much money you get when I'm dead. And it's funny because every once in a while, even now that I'll fly and not think twice about it, and I don't know what happened to me in 2014-ish where, like, 30 years of I'm not flying just went away. 20 years, right. Something like that. Just kind of went away. And I don't think about it anymore. I never think about it. But every once in a while when I'm sitting on the plane, I do the calculation of what the damages for the wrongful death lawsuit would be if the pilot's drunk or whatever and the plane crashes or there's something, whatever the liability would be.
Happy thoughts, yeah.
But I start doing the math based on, you know, earnings and value of the business and it just everything that would go into it. And it's like, man, I'm worth a hell of a lot more dead than alive. Like, they'd be having a hell of a party here.
Come on,
if
Jill.
That happened.
Come on, Jill. Figure it out.
It would be quite a settlement. The lawyer that I used to be would very much love to represent my estate if one of those planes goes down. So that's the ultimate life insurance for her if it comes to it. But we have since. I did give in. we do have life insurance.
Okay. All right, good. I didn't expect it to go there. I was just talking about 8 billion population. You went into freaking life insurance and death and all that. Jeez.
In the event it drops to 7999999999, my family will be very well taken care of, and I'll be dead. All right, let's get to it. Speaking of guys who are almost dead, Aaron Rodgers. Team was almost dead. That's what I'm going for, not him literally dying. The team was dead. Let me just be clear on that. The Packers got the win after five straight losses, and Rodgers, speaking with reporters yesterday, usually does it on Wednesday, but this is that screwy short week. He's trying to get that thumb ready to go, get it rehabbed. He hasn't been practicing on Wednesdays. Now he's playing on a Thursday. Here he is from yesterday, talking about whether or not the team's offense, based upon what we saw on Sunday, is morphing into the thing that he envisioned it to be. Have a listen.
I don't know. I mean, I think there's overreactions, you know, negatively and positively every single game you play. And no offense, Tim, but, you know, like, you haven't been the only one who's talked about sustainability and certain ways of winning and playing. I think it's all week to week. It really is. You know, you try and find your identity throughout the season. A lot of that is, you know, kind of just jargon to keep a conversation going. In fact, the most important identity is competitive greatness and going out there and playing your best when your best is needed. We hadn't played a four-quarter game all season. I felt like that was really close Sunday. Really proud of the guys, the way we finished in the fourth quarter and then put together a good drive in overtime. But I don't know. I mean, you have ideas about how things are going to be, I think, when the season starts. But you don't know what's going to happen injury-wise and play style and which guy's going to play really good and which guys are going to struggle maybe a little bit. I think we all were hoping for a performance like that out of nine and excited for him. But obviously not having 87 out there is taking some opportunities away from our offense. But if we can get Cobbie back, that'd be a big lift. The consistent players that we've had in this league have been behind me in the backfield. You know, Jonesy's had a great season and AJ's been playing really well. So we got to keep riding those guys.
I wonder what you have to do to actually earn a name from Aaron Rodgers. 9-87 then becomes Cobbie and Jonesy.
Yeah. Well, you gotta be there. That's typical. That's typical in a locker room. It is. Sometimes the rookies don't get a name or they're only called by a nickname until they earn that first year. There was like that. I used to tell young guys in the offseason, like, hey, you got to make the team, and then I'll remember your name. That's how we'll do it. Because I had nicknames for everybody, too. You got 90 guys in the locker room one day. All of a sudden, you're like, whoa, I don't know everybody. So you're like, hey, Utah, come over here. Hey, you know, big dude. Yeah, you, blockhead, come over here. Hey, blockhead, hey, I like you. Let's talk, blockhead. You know, I mean, that's
wait
how
a minute,
it works.
Wait a minute. How big would someone's head have to be for you to call him block?
Well, you know, in the NFL, there's some big heads out there. You know that for sure. Some of those offensive linemen, but they got cinder blocks. They don't even got brains in there. They just got a big stone head. So, yeah, that goes on.
But what occurred to me while he was explaining that, and here's the reality. Whatever your plans are that are carefully or haphazardly, as the case may be, made in the off season, when it's time to play games that count, it is a blur.
Yeah.
A lot happens, but you really don't have many opportunities to go out there and hone your offensive craft. You get, what, 7-8 drives a game if you're lucky?
Right.
Is that a good number of drives in a game? 7, 8, 9?
Yeah, right around there.
And if you're sputtering, you're not getting many drives at all, and you're on the sideline trying to figure it out, then you go back out, and you 3 and out, and what the hell's wrong, and the game's getting out of control, and you start getting desperate, ditch the running game, heavy on the pass because you're down by 17. I mean, it makes it hard to have the kind of continuity that you would like to have and build one game on another, but the Packers finally looked a lot like what they want to be because they did get great running out of Jonesy, and they got great catching and running out of nine
against
the Cowboys on Sunday. Now we'll see if they can do it on a short week. That's going to be the key. Short week turnaround. I already mentioned the thumb for Aaron Rodgers. Will he be good to go Thursday night? But they got a good team coming in for a primetime game, and we'll see. They get this next one, though. Makes that game in Philadelphia, week 12, very interesting. Great addition to the Thanksgiving weekend slate, Green Bay at Philadelphia, if the Packers win on Thursday night. And even if they don't, We just saw the Eagles struggle with the Commanders. We could see them struggle with the Packers.
Yeah,
too.
Sure. No doubt about it. I mean, you know, the Green Bay thing and what you're talking with Aaron Rodgers. I mean, you're right. It is hard. It's hard when you're not there at OTAs. It's hard in training camp, right? Because it's limited, even though it's still a lot of practice and all that. But to your point, too, it's not time on the field where, it's not a controlled environment anymore. We're not getting a lot of preseason snaps together. That bleeds over into the regular season now where you're trying to figure that stuff out through the month of September. And then, like Roger said, you get an injury or two. You know, added to the fact of a guy like Christian Watson was already a rookie and kind of raw, and then he gets injured. Oh, wait, now we got to kick the can down the road. It's another few more weeks before he can contribute to the football team. So, you know, that's where it is tough, and especially in their situation up in Green Bay. And then Rodgers, you know, I mean, that question there, is this what the offense you envision? I don't know. I mean, obviously not. That was the answer to that. I mean, he would have been like, yeah, that was close. That's what I wanted to do. You know, I'm not sold on this Green Bay offense's fits by any stretch of the imagination. They made some plays the other day. There's no doubt they ran the ball fantastic. And it looks like, hey, maybe they continue to be able to run the ball like that. But we've seen, like, yeah, they did it against Buffalo. Buffalo, it was the fourth quarter. They were playing pass defense. Von Miller talked about that. And we were seeing that maybe Buffalo's run defense isn't all that we thought it was. You know, it's kind of all over the place a little bit. And then, you know, of course, what they did in this game against Dallas was special. But the other thing with Dallas, too, and when you're a well-coached running team, they're a small defense, Dallas. I mean, they really only got one run stopper. Their other D tackle is 280 pounds. DeMarcus Lawrence is 260-something pounds. Doris Armstrong's in the 250s. So I think it was a favorable matchup. I'm not ready to sit here and say it's fixed yet, though, Mike, just because we got a few one-on-one shots down the field to Christian Watson and ran the ball.
Well, because what will happen now is defenses will adjust to that reality, and it'll be harder for Christian Watson to run free, and they'll load up a little bit more against the defense. And like you said, some of these teams they're going to be seeing may be better suited to shutting down the run. But I think, just like with so many other teams, it's a common theme, and maybe we need to be far more sensitive to it generally across the board, everyone in the media, than we are. If a team can't run the ball, it makes it so much harder to throw the ball. And we rattled off the stats earlier this week. It was the highest percentage of running plays that the Packers have had with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback. They had their highest percentage of play action when they did throw on Sunday since 2020.
Right.
That's the key. If you run the ball well, you do play action, you freeze the second level, and you take the steam out of a Micah Parsons, and you find a Christian Watson.
Unless you're Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, they don't need a run game. But that's how good they are.
Well,
they're offense.
That's right. No, you're right. You're right. But what do we say? What do we say from time to time?
Yeah,
when they
it's too much.
Man,
it's
they
too
did,
much.
They need to run. They need to run more. Yeah. Relying too much on these guys to go out and save the
agreed.
Team. But
no, agreed. I was just having fun with you there. I mean, your point's still.
But even for them,
very much
but even
real.
For them, that's
you got to have
point.
Something. Yeah. You're right. They got to have Kadarius Toney speed sweeps, a screen, stuff like that to take a little pressure off. So yeah, we will see. I mean, Dallas, again, a really good defense, you know, causes turnovers, all that, you know, but to your point, too, because they're smaller, they got people in the box, they put themselves in some man-to-man situations where, you know, again, Rodgers was, okay, there's, you know, there's great reward here and there's little risk, right? And that's the one thing that he's comfortable with. Again, I'm not going to say it's all fixed in the passing game. Running game is solid. We know that. And they're very well coached, and they always do the right thing. But I'm not going to say the passing game is fixed until I see a 20-yard in cut, you know, in between two defenders and it's put in the hole there, or the crossing route with somebody trailing them by just a foot or so and Aaron Rodgers throws the missile in there. There's still reluctance to do that even when I watch the film of this pass game where you just go, man, again, you're Aaron Rodgers. Your arm is still top-notch. You got to throw that in there right there. But, you know,
just
looking at the rush and being too conservative is certainly still an issue there.
Just a missile?
Just a missile. Yeah, just a missile. Just a missile.
Not a piss missile.
No, not a piss missile. He doesn't got that Josh Allen Mahomes piss missile action right now. Nope. Can't put him in that class.
After Sunday's overtime win over the Cowboys, Aaron Rodgers admitted to having some frustration with head coach Matt LaFleur. And it took me back to after LaFleur got the job, how Rodgers very expertly turned it into a public thing about the freedom that he would have at the line of scrimmage to change the play. It was the audible thing. And I could just sense LaFleur was exasperated by this whole thing, that it was just already out of his control because Rodgers knew how to work it through the media to get his message out there. He was more direct with his message after the win over the Cowboys about frustrations late in the game with LaFleur's decisions. Here's Rodgers from Sunday.
Aaron, what were you so upset about in the last drive of regulation there coming off?
Just every single play call, probably.
Is there a reason those play calls were upsetting to you?
Yeah, I feel like we were like 30 yards from end of the game in regulation. And also felt like it was 2 minutes, so I was going to be calling those, and I was in a pretty good rhythm. Obviously didn't have a ton of attempts tonight, but it felt like I was in a pretty good rhythm. I felt like I threw the ball just about exactly where I wanted to tonight. And so I wanted a chance to go win the game.
He wanted to get the game over so he could go rob a bank somewhere. Again,
I kind of
all black.
I like the all black.
Every
I like
Sunday.
It. I know, it's kind of funny. I don't know what's changed them. But, yeah, here's the sequence of play calling. It certainly wasn't aggressive. That's for sure. You know, I mean, they were running the ball. But do you blame them, Mike? I mean, that's where I'll go, like, wait, you're Green Bay Packers. Your offense hasn't been good all year long. You've talked about, you know, young guys not being able to trust them and people not doing the right thing. And you're coming off a game where you just turned the ball over a bunch of times. And you're playing the Dallas Cowboys, who are famous for making teams turn the ball over. So I'm not going to sit there and, like, you know, be mad at Matt LaFleur for making that decision right there in that moment. I'm fine with it.
I think that, to me, how aggressive you are in a situation like that is driven so much by whether you're home or away.
Yeah.
Because if you're at home and you know you're going to overtime,
yeah, it's
I
a different
feel better
feel.
About being conservative and being careful. Because one false move in that moment gives the Cowboys a chance to have a walk-off field goal and you never get to overtime. But I'm more comfortable going to overtime with my home fan, my home crowd, my home field. If we're going to pay any attention to analytics over time, I would suspect that most teams have a better chance of winning overtime games at home than on the road. And so you're going to be a little more careful. Why wouldn't you be more careful? So I don't have a problem with that at all. If they were in Dallas for that, I'd be saying, why weren't you slinging
it down
going
the field for it.
Trying to steal this thing?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they scored their touchdown that tied the game with too much time left to even consider going for two, but it's that same mindset. If you would score a touchdown at the very end of regulation and you have to decide to go for one and force overtime or two and win it, for me, the rule of thumb is if I'm home, I'm more likely to take one. If I'm on the road, I'm more likely to take two and just end it there. And also, like, how tired is my team? How banged up is my team? What plays do I have left? Do I feel confident that I can stop a touchdown on the first drive of overtime?
Right.
A lot of other factors
yeah,
go into it.
Right.
But the frontline factor for me is home or away.
Yeah.
And I think it was smart for them to be conservative in that moment. And it worked. It worked. And in that moment, he was pissed because, you know, he's thinking we go to overtime. We're just going to concede and they're going to beat us. But LaFleur was right and his plan was vindicated.
Yeah, I mean, he was. And I, you know, I think your point is real. You know, I think the talk of, you know, last week, and there's been mistakes on the offensive side of the ball from them all year long. The Cowboys, they create chaos and plays, and that's what they do. You add that into, wait, in the fourth quarter, you kind of controlled the football game, Green Bay. Dallas was having a hard time moving the ball consistently. You take that into account. Hey, Joe Barry, defensive coordinator. Hey, yeah, we got a good I got a good feel for him right now. We got him. We kind of know we know what they're trying to do almost always. So I understand that logic. I do. The way the defense was playing and the way they were running the football and kind of controlling the line of scrimmage there, I understand it. You know, one thing I think that would have been questioned would have been like, whoa, wait, we're getting in shotgun and throwing the ball against a team that's amazing at rushing the passer and creating tips and interceptions, and we're the team that's kind of been doing that and getting sacked, and we got a quarterback that won't be aggressive and necessarily throw the ball into tight windows and do all that right now. I think when you add all that together, I totally understand Matt LaFleur's decision.
Yeah, and bottom line is they get the win. They're 4-6. There's still a long way to go. I'm still getting used
I know,
to
right?
17 games.
That Jeez. Extra game really makes weeks. It seem so different.
I mean, they still have seven games left.
Yeah.
They've played 10, and they've got seven games to go. Their bye is very late, and that can be a positive or a negative. I mean, some teams are going to peak too soon, and some teams are going to have an extra chance to figure their stuff out, get to the playoffs, and then be very dangerous in January. And I continue to believe the Packers far more dangerous if they get their issues ironed out and get in as a wild card than if they're one seed and they're all tight. And, you know, we've seen it the last 2 years. They're a little tight. You're worried about screwing up instead of just going out there and being loose like they were
loose.
The sixth seed back in 2010.
Right.
And they went on the road and won, on the road and won, on the road and won, and then won the Super Bowl. And the prospect of two-seeded Vikings hosting the seven-seeded Packers is not a pleasant thought for anyone who is still enjoying Minnesota's win over the Bills from a few days ago, because that would be the ultimate dagger in that rivalry to have the Packers roll in and completely destroy what Vikings fans are thinking is a special.
NetCredit is here to say yes to a personal loan or line of credit when other lenders say no. Apply in minutes and get a decision as soon as the same day. Loans offered by NetCredit or lending partner banks and serviced by NetCredit. Application subject to review and approval. Learn more at netcredit.com/partner. NetCredit, credit to the people.
Season. All right, the Buccaneers can still have a special season. They're another team that can create havoc in the postseason, and I believe more in them right now, frankly, than the Packers.
Oh, definitely. I'm with you there, Mike. Right.
All of a sudden, they're the team they were 2 years ago. The defense is playing well. They're getting production in the running game. Rashad White, they're using just enough of him to piss off Leonard Fournette, just enough to play better than he was. Tom Brady is still Tom Brady. But there was an interesting item yesterday on JoeBucksFan.com where Bruce Arians, the senior advisor to the general manager that we haven't heard or seen much from since week two when he instigated the fight between Mike Evans and Marshawn Lattimore, he talked about the three-game losing streak. And he mentioned that he conversed with Byron Leftwich, the offensive coordinator, every day when they were losing games. He doesn't read the papers. Nothing bothers Byron. That's what I love about him. That's why I'll be a damn good head coach one day. He weathers everything. Todd Bowles does too, but I don't think it was fair to Byron. Nobody is going to say that Tom Brady was playing bad, but he was playing bad. We also had growing pains on a young offensive line, and we weren't running well. But, you know, that reminds me of 2020.
Yeah.
Arians was calling Brady out every week, and
he's got to hit that.
Hey,
he's got to hit
the Super Bowl.
He can't do that.
They won the Super Bowl.
Right.
He was blaming interceptions on him that weren't his fault. Balls that went off the hands of the receiver were Brady's fault. What the hell was
that?
Got
to hang in there and throw the ball. Yeah.
But it worked. Yeah. But it worked. And you know, I don't know how this came to be. That apparently, there's another item just posted this morning on JoeBucksFan.com that Bruce Arians spent some time in the hospital. He's having chest pains. He's fine. Everything's good. This was back around the time they played Atlanta, maybe one of the reasons he's kind of slipped out of focus. He didn't go to Germany for the game against the Seahawks, and he did an interview with Ira Kaufman of JoeBucksFan.com, so he's kind of back in the mix now.
Yeah, but, good.
Hey,
good.
You know, I mean, look, you got this guy on your team. He's got a very vague and amorphous role, but maybe there's times where he can do something to give a little tweak here, a little push there, and get people a little extra focused and fired up.
I think that's what is missed in that team a little bit to a degree. You can say what you want. I mean, he gave the Bucs edge, you know, an edge the last 2 years. I think he was that guy. I think he did make the Bucs tough and edgy and, you know, wait, they said, what about us? You know, screw them. It's us against the world. Bruce is, I think, great that way. You know, I think he is. And then driving players kind of the same way and knowing how to needle them. And, yeah, I'm sure there's something tactical, let alone he's sticking up for his friends and Byron Leftwich and of course, Todd Bowles. And then also just speaking the reality. I mean, I'm disappointed because I want to go, Bruce, and apparently you're not watching me very much because I was trying to point out some of these problems. We were showing that on this show, right? I mean, it's a little bit what we talked about with Rodgers, a reluctance to hang in there and throw the ball down the field, you know? Nothing there. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, watching the rush, maybe not as much as Aaron Rodgers, but, like, just never giving any chance or a play to develop. Like, oh, the underneath throw's open. Let me throw it. But, yeah, you're protected, and there's going to be a guy wide open. Like, why are we doing that? There was a lot of that. And that's what Bruce Arians, I think, bothered him in 2020 when he was kind of needling Tom Brady a little. But, yeah, I mean, he's not wrong. You know, that when the Bucs struggle, nobody ever blames Tom Brady. Never. And it's never on him. And I'm sure the team and everybody gets sick of that a little bit, for sure. But, you know, Bruce Arians is there to kind of let people know. And I don't know if it really has any tactical advantage now, but, you know, I think he's just trying to stick up for his guys as it stands right now.
But was Brady getting a pass? I don't think we were giving him a pass.
No, that's what I was just saying. We were the only. That's why I said Bruce wasn't watching us. We weren't giving him a pass.
Well, you know, hi, Bruce.
Hey, Bruce. I showed a few plays on the Football Night in America, you know, early in the year, going like, hey, here's people open. We showed it in Pittsburgh and Carolina. You know, there was a number of plays in those two games where they were upset and beat. You know, of course, the game where he went to see Mr. Kraft and the wedding on a Friday night. I mean, he played like crap in that game. You know, it was apparent. Anybody that really kind of knew football and, you know, the reads and against that defense, like Big Ben was talking about, he didn't even look like he wanted to be there. You know, so, but nobody ever really, you know, puts it on him. And I'm sure that frustrates guys down there.
Well, people were tiptoeing on eggshells, too, because he was dealing with
the personal stuff.
Significant personal issue.
No question.
And another thing that Arian said that caught my attention.
Yeah.
Last week in practice was the first time he saw Brady smile.
Right.
Practice this year.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's a lot. I feel for Brady.
To the Ravens, where things kind of bottomed out.
Yep.
That's when the divorce was announced, and you know, at some point you turn the corner. At some point, things boomerang in a positive direction. It can't get any worse. It can only get better, and so it's getting better for the Bucs.
It is.
They're going to win that division.
Right.
I mean, I'd be shocked.
What?
Shocked.
What?
If the Falcons overtake the Buccaneers.
No
way. The Buccaneers are going to leave Atlanta in the dust. Atlanta, I don't know how Atlanta's even in shouting distance of 500, frankly, after that shit show we saw last Thursday night in Charlotte. But the Buccaneers are going to run away with that division.
Agreed.
And they'll be the 4 seed. Maybe, hey, they got the tiebreaker with the Seahawks now. Maybe they'll be the 3 seed. Who knows?
Right.
Who knows? Kirk Cousins, he's going to go from Aaron Rodgers 1 week to Tom Brady the next week. Oh, boy.
Well, the thing
after what I saw on Sunday, though, I'm not going to just assume that he's going to crumple.
That's right. That's right. Stick up. That's your quarterback. Stick up for him. That's right. But yeah, we'll see. Tampa Bay still got some games on their schedule. We know New Orleans gives them an issue. They got to play them again. They got the 49ers and the Bengals. But, you know, other than that, it is favorable. Cardinals, Panthers, Falcons, Browns. I mean, yeah, it's hard not to think that they're easily going to win the division. And, Mike, I agree with you, too. They're dangerous. To me, they're the team, you know, that defense with it healthy now again. That was the story of the game more than anything to me. The defense dominating the Seahawks, big play offense. What they've done to teams, you know, making explosive plays, run game, pass game on just about everybody, and they couldn't do jack diddly squat against Tampa Bay. So they play D like that, run the ball a little like you were talking about. We know Brady, that'll make him feel comfortable off a play action pass. It's not a complicated formula there. That's what they did at the end of the season to win the Super Bowl. That's kind of how they played. It was kind of conservative on offense. Play action pass, run the ball, play D. That's all it was. We'll see if they can get back into that.
And remember how they were coming out of their bye 2 years ago, 7-5 on the way in,
right?
Unbeaten on the way out.
Exploded.
This year, 5-5 on the way in. And it sure helps to have Akiem Hicks with Vita Vea.
No question.
You can't have one run stopper. You got to have two.
They're
he's
killers.
He's got to stay healthy.
Yeah.
But, you know, 7 more games.
I know.
Chances are one of those two guys is going to get banged up at some point, and
I
that's
hope
what
not.
Teams have to deal with. Yep. But, you know, that's kind of the common thread. The Packers off the mat, the Buccaneers off the mat, and one of the keys is they're healthy. Their key guys are healthy.
Yep.
The more your key guys are healthy, the easier it is to win football games in the NFL. It's cliche, but it's true. Another thing that's true that people are having a hard time processing, the Commanders are in the thick of things in the NFC playoff chase. We talked earlier this week how it's quite possible every team from the AFC East is getting in, and every team from the NFC East could get in. Right now, the Commanders are just outside the 7th seed, but they got to 5-5 on Monday night with that upset win over the Philadelphia Eagles. Here's Ron Rivera on the factors that he will consider when determining the starting quarterback once Carson Wentz is healthy again.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at the momentum. You have to look at, you know, what what the mood of the team is, obviously. There's a lot of factors that go into it, John. A lot of things that I'll have to discuss with Scott and Kenny, for that matter. You know, you look at what is best for the team. And at the end of the day, that's how it has to be. You know, there's a great saying that you treat everybody the same, you treat everybody fair, but you treat everybody according to the team. And that's what this is about. So the decision being made will be about the team first and foremost. You know, and one thing that I've always done is whoever the starter is, you know, I'm going to commit to them fully. And because I don't want them looking over their shoulder. I want them to understand this is the opportunity and this is where we're going with it. So whatever the decision is made after, you know, my conversations today and tomorrow morning, that's what we're sticking to.
Well, that's easier said than done, because, again, it's hard to reconcile what's best for the team with making the starting quarterback believe that he's the guy and he's not looking over his shoulder. It's best for the team that he's not looking over his shoulder, but at some point it may be best for the team to go to the other guy. If you're guided by what's best for the team, if the guy is urinating and or defecating down his leg, you go to the other guy. So, and I don't know why we're even having this conversation. How is it not Taylor Heinicke?
No, that's the point.
Is he just being
Mike.
Respectful to Carson Wentz?
I don't know.
Why are we even talking about this?
That to me is the point. That is exactly right. I would just want to go, well, everything you just said there is Taylor Heinicke. So stop delaying it and making this a little bit more of an issue than it is. You know, and I know Ron Rivera. He's going to come out today, and it's going to get squashed. I mean, he is going to make some sort. He was referring to today, right? As far as a decision he's going to make here, but.
Somebody's getting the reps. Somebody's getting the reps in practice, right?
Right. Well, and is Carson Wentz officially cleared? Is that official to where he can start practicing? I wasn't sure if it was 100%. I thought there was maybe another week here he was going to have to wait. But yes, he's not cleared yet.
He is not cleared yet. Right. So decision doesn't have to be made until he's cleared.
No, but to your
point. That's the other thing, too. He's just not cleared. The 100% rule.
Right.
He's not healthy.
Right.
He's not. Just have the doctor mess with that finger enough to give him a little setback, and he won't be cleared for another couple of weeks.
Well, it can buy you some more time decision.
Right.
You know, maybe to read this.
And it makes it easier for the decision to be made if Taylor Heinicke all of a sudden doesn't have it anymore. Then you're not really benching him. He's just no longer as hot as he was, so we got to flip it back to Carson Wentz. I mean, if you can milk this injury as long as you can while Heinicke's playing well, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, well, yes. And I would think, again, that they got Houston and Atlanta on the schedule, definitely winnable games for them, to where they're the more talented team on the field. There's no question about that. The only thing that can hurt the Commanders is their offensive line, and we're seeing they're playing better as of late. I mean, they've won 3 out of 4. And, you know, 3 out of 4 and really should be 4 out of 4. Outplayed your Minnesota Vikings. And I don't mean that in any disrespect. I'm not trying to play. They outplayed them. You know, they just made some vital mistakes at the very end of the game. Heinicke had a wide open receiver down the middle, threw the ball 5 feet over his head. You know, it's just one of those things. So, but I'm with you, Mike, that I wouldn't even make this a conversation right now. And, you know, and why can't you go back? Why don't you just say Taylor Heinicke right now, believe in it, go with it? If he plays like crap the next 3 games and you go into your bye week, then you make the switch. No one's going to sit here and go, oh, man, they benched Taylor Heinicke? What's going on there in Washington? But I think it's clearly that he's the guy right now.
But I really do think there's a way to finesse this if you're Ron Rivera where you push it back, you keep going for Taylor Heinicke, and it'll either resolve itself in a negative way for Heinicke or a positive.
Yes,
he'll keep
right.
playing well, mm-hmm. or he won't. But when you peek ahead here, like you said, they're at Houston this week, then they have the Falcons at home, then it's at the Giants going into their bye. And, you know, maybe the idea is just ride it out with Heinicke. They should win the next two. If they beat the Giants or at least don't embarrass themselves against the Giants, then maybe it's Heinicke coming out
They'll
of the bye. Out of the bye,
there,
it's not
man.
Easy.
Yeah.
They got the Giants sandwich.
Yeah.
They got Giants by Giants. Then at the 49ers, who, boy, good luck with that. The Browns at home, and then week 18 against the Cowboys. So there's some tough – and remember, the Browns by week 17 are going to have Deshaun Watson. So there's some tough games. They got two winnable games. I don't want to call them easy because
the
Texans aren't horrible. The Texans could beat them. The Texans have not been embarrassed yet.
No, they were tied at halftime versus the Eagles, like we discussed. You're right. They're not.
Yeah.
And
so,
Washington hasn't shown us the prowess to blow anybody out, right? Just like the
and
Giants.
And it's just going to get tough. The last five games are going to get tough. Giants twice, Cowboys, 49ers, Browns with Deshaun Watson, that it's going to be hard for them to hold it together.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's we're going to see if they're legit. We're going to see if they're playoff worthy. You know, I do think they're a team that is got a lot of playoff caliber traits. When you got a defense like that, like we talked about yesterday, that D-line, there's no team in football that the Washington Commanders will play that will – they're going to go in a game and go, oh, no, we're just outmatched up front on the defensive line. We can't stop the run. We won't be able to rush the passer. Nobody. They can almost dominate every offensive line in football. They're that special up there. We know they got weapons. They're kind of creative. Heineke's got a little magic about them. Now they're running the ball a little bit. I could see them making a little run here and making this real interesting and, you know, making that second team in the NFC West a little nervous here about, oh, gosh, we got to keep winning football games, the 49ers or the Seahawks, because, you know, Washington, the Giants, and the Cowboys are all, you know, in the thick of things in the NFC East.
It's going to be a fun ride over the next 8 weeks.
Yeah.
It's just I don't know how many years it's going to take for me to get used to the 17th game. And probably by the time I get used to it, you know what's going to happen. There's going to be an 18th.
Well, it's just amazing how one extra game makes the season feel like there's a little more wiggle room for mistakes and like just getting your feet underneath you as a football team. It's really amazing that it's changed the perspective like that. Where now September was always crucial, and now it's like we added an extra game. Everybody's like, well, we can take a few weeks of kind of like preseason, regular season football in September just because of one game. And I don't know. I'm literally trying to figure it out why it's like that, but it is fascinating.
Well, and it becomes crucial as it relates to tiebreakers.
Yes.
It does. I mean, look, the Vikings may woefully regret the performance they had week 2 Monday night in Philadelphia, because that may force them to go back there at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
A game from four
and we know
early.
That don't work out so well when you got to go back there in the playoffs. We know it doesn't work so good.
my son
Dan gave the stat. You guys gave a statue to Nick Foles. Jeez, holy cow!
Wherever the NFC Championship game is, if the Vikings somehow, some way earn the chance to go 0-8 in the NFC Championship since their last Super Bowl appearance in 1976, he's going to go. And he said, even if it's in Philly, I'm going to go.
Wow.
And he's going to.
I'll go if it's the Giants.
He's going to wear his colors.
If it's Minnesota.
He's going to wear his colors to Philly. And I said, you're not wearing your colors.
No, you can't do that. Alex, you're going to go home with two black eyes and some broken fingers and stuff like that. You can't do that in Philadelphia. Please don't. But if Minnesota hosts and has the Giants come to town for like the NFC Championship, let's do it. I'm there. We'll go.
Hey,
we don't have a show that night. We could have some fun. I'll root for the Giants. I won't get beat up if I wear a Giants jersey in Minnesota. Those fans seem somewhat nice, and we can have a good time.
That's right. They're very nice. They're very nice. They're very polite. And unless they lose, unless you're responsible for the heart being ripped out and shown to the Vikings, Omamshiba style, once again in an NFC Championship game. I used to worry when, like, you know, in the 80s and the 90s, rabid fan, living and dying with it. The way my son is now, that's the other thing that makes this so special. He is as nuts, over the top, obsessed as I was back at that age.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's texting me during the game, I can't breathe, I'm going to vomit. He told me at one point he was in the barn, he was like laying on the floor in the back room of the barn. Like, he just couldn't function. Like, he didn't know what to do in that, you know, like when it's going to overtime, like, what do you do? Like, how do you feel in this? Like, can this just be over? That's how I used to feel. But anyway, what was my point? Oh, yeah, he's all in. So we'll go. We'll be there. Hopefully, maybe, Giants, Vikings, or whoever, Vikings. We're determined. We've made the pact that we're going to go. And, yeah, we don't have a game that weekend. We'll just have to do a show on Monday from somewhere in Minnesota. And that'd be great. That's another reason for you to go.
Yeah, right.
You can find someplace up there, and you can be – oh, that, you know what, though? Boy, that you will be as insufferable as you are normally. The morning after the Giants beat the Vikings to advance to the Super Bowl, we're doing a show in Minnesota, would be the worst.
Oh,
I think I'd be sick that day.
You would be. It would be Phil Simms jerseys, Danny Dimes jerseys, Saquon jerseys, just rubbing it in your face, yelling G-men the whole show. Yeah, it wouldn't be good for you.
There is a dose. I hate calling it revenge because how dare you do your job and win a football game? But that 41-0.
Oh yeah, I know. That was a great day. Great day.
That still stings.
Damn, I know. I was there. I tailgated. Gosh, the game was over by the time my buzz ran off. It was amazing. I was like, man, I had a few beers. I was feeling good, and I was going, man, it's the second quarter. It's 28-0. Minnesota didn't show up that day.
It was over when Troy Walters watched the kick hit the ground. They had grass at the time. It hit the grass and bounced backward, and the Giants recovered, and it was 14-0 just like that.
Yes.
Then it was done. It was done. But that day was less painful than the day 2 years earlier when the Vikings lost in overtime
to Atlanta,
to the Falcons,
right,
proving what I was saying over and over again in the viewing room on Sunday. I'd rather lose by 40 points. And I would. I'd rather lose by 40 than have that game of up and down, back and forth, roller coaster end with the Bills winning, which I still can't believe. I still can't believe that game. I still can't believe it. And the Vikings are underdogs at home against the Cowboys on Sunday.
Wow.
How about that?
Yeah. I'm not shocked. You know, I mean, it's surprising, but it's not shocking, I guess. You know, you think a team that's that record at home, they'd probably be a 1-point favorite, something like that. But again, I think a lot of people see what, you know, we've discussed with Minnesota. There hasn't been an elite football game to talk about as of yet that they've put together where you just went, oh, man, that looked like a team that can go and win the Super Bowl. I give them credit. They're winning the games. They're hanging around there. But I think that's why, you know, people like me and even yourself before last week, you're questioning that as well. They've had some shamrocks up their butts and some horseshoes up their butts and, you know, and of course made a few plays too. I don't want to take that away from them, but, you know, it's been a little lucky or favorable in the way things have shook out for the Vikings.
The big difference, though, is that when it all goes sideways now, they find a way to dig deep and overcome
hang
it.
In
past years, once it would go sideways, the air would go out of the balloon, and that would be it, and it's done, and it's not their day. So they have an organizational resilience that they have not had in years, where no matter how it goes, they're going to find a way. And they are 1.5-point underdogs at home. We'll do the full picks podcast on Thursday. And look, I'm not going to rub it in your face too much tomorrow that I picked the Vikings to beat the Bills because I was operating under the assumption that Case Keenum was going to play. I never would have picked the Vikings to win that game if I knew Josh Allen was going to play, ever. So I got lucky. I had a shamrock up my butt last week.
Yeah,
because
we know.
I fell for the idea that it was going to be Case Keenum and not Josh Allen. Let's go ahead and take a break. Some injury updates when this Wednesday edition of PFT Live presented by Google Pixel continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.